Welcome to FemMonk, a podcast about politics, public policy, and current affairs that takes an intersectional approach to topics that we care about. I'm your host, Katie Davey. Thanks so much for joining me. So I'm incredibly excited about our conversation today. I've been following the organization Operation Black Vote for quite a while now, and I thought that this month, of course, being Black History Month, made so much sense for us to actually have a nice conversation and really dig into all of the fantastic things that are happening with the organization and broadly in the context of Canadian politics. So with that in mind, Velma, I'm going to ask you if you wouldn't mind just giving our listeners an overview of the organization and a bit of history as well.
Perfect. Thank you very much for having us. I'm actually the chair of Operation Black Vote Canada. Operation Black Vote Canada has been in existence since 2004. We are a multi-partisan, not-for-profit organization, and our goal is to have more Black Canadians elected to political office and appointed to agencies, boards, and commissions. We understand that there is a gap, and we truly believe that representation matters. So we actually do a lot of outreach, not only to our community, but also to all levels of government and from all political stripes.
I think it's so important that, you know, on this podcast, particularly in the federal election, we talked a lot about getting more women involved.
Yes.
But it's always pointed out as well that just talking about getting more women involved doesn't actually solve many of the problems that we see for representation. Yes. And actually, I remember very distinctly, so I worked in the New Brunswick Premier's office, and I remember learning in New Brunswick that we had never elected a person of visible minority ever, still to this day. Yes. And that's something that I actually find, I find really shameful, and that makes me upset. But I'd love actually to hear some success stories from your perspective. Tell us about some of the leaders in Canada and some of the folks that you've worked with.
Okay, so we've had not a lot of elected officials. That's what we're working on. That's why we have Operation Black Vote. But we've had throughout Canadian history different people elected to political office. So a lot of them are first. So for instance, there's Ann Coles, and Ann Coles was the first Black senator. There is Jean Augustine, and Jean Augustine is, I'm not quite sure if a lot of people realize, but she is the person that made Black history possible. She was a person that brought in the resolution to declare Black History in February across Canada. There is also William Hubber. I'm not quite sure people know about him, but he was the first city councillor in Toronto in 1894, and he fought to keep Toronto Hydro public and help establish the Toronto Hydro electric system, and he advocated for Chinese and Jewish, the Jewish communities, and he was actually the first deputy mayor of Toronto that was Black.
Yeah, fantastic. I think that is such a great starting place for folks to do a bit more Googling and find out about these remarkable Canadians as a starting place. We did just have an election a few months ago, actually. So I'd love to hear from your perspective how that went, really, just broadly, and kind of dig into a bit of a conversation there.
Yeah. So we were a bit disappointed at the results of the election as it pertained to our community. Went down to having four Black candidates, five if you include someone who's from the Caribbean, and that was a decrease in numbers from the previous election. We were disappointed that the two major parties did not put forth more Black candidates to run in winnable ridings. So that was a major reason for the decrease in those who were elected. And that's one of our mandates. Our mandate is actually to get more Black people elected. And so prior to the election, we actually spoke to all the leaders of the political parties. And one of our asks were to nominate and have candidates in winnable ridings. Very often parties will have a Black candidate, but they might be in a ward or a riding that, you know, there is, it's not, it hasn't been let's say, liberal for the past 50 years. So the chances of it becoming a liberal riding is not very high. So we ask that they actually run Black candidates in winnable ridings.
I think that's such a issue that cuts across so many demographics, and it's so frustrating, right? You'll see these seats where they're strong party hold seats.
Yes.
And instead of, even in many cases, they don't even have a real meaningful open nomination for those seats. They just kind of go to pre-selected folks, and you know that it's going to be, not always, but it ends up being a safe seat. That's something we saw tremendously in New Brunswick in our last provincial election as well. And so, yeah, you know, you get parties who kind of try to check off the boxes and say, you know, we've got, for example, you know, 30% women running, but it doesn't translate. So I'd love to hear a little bit more about maybe some of the things you folks are working on to, I guess, help promote that translation.
Right. So from our community, so internally in our community, we have a couple of initiatives that we produce to engage our community. So we have the Black Women's Political Summit, and the purpose of the summit is to engage Black women who are thinking of running for political office, and we provide them with some support and resources. We know that for the general population of women who are, for women, we have to ask them at least 7 times for them to run for political office. You know, they think they need to be, they have to check off all these boxes before they're ready to run. For men, not so much. They're usually ready to run the first time you ask them. So for Black women, it's even, we have to ask them even more times. They have to, because they don't have the same type of networks as other people do in order to raise money. So we have to sort of get them conditioned prior to an election on things that they need to do when they're ready to run. We also have the Next Generation Youth Summit, and that's a summit that brings together youth from across the communities to network and learn about volunteering and political campaigns, and also internships. There are tons of internships at every level of government, and a lot of times our youth don't know about these internships. And from my experience working with government, we hardly saw, you know, a Black youth being an intern or coming through those programs. So we provide the information for them and also offer to help them fill out their application. So there are tons of job opportunities, and we want our youth, our Black youth, to be able to have those opportunities and access, because chances are some of those access will lead into jobs in either as a political staffer or even running in the long run.
You're talking a lot about kind of, yeah, helping to support the pipeline and bringing folks in. Talk to me a little bit more about that and how important that is. And you mentioned just in the case of, you know, political offices and things like that, how important is that pipeline for translating into actual elected positions?
It is extremely important. I know for our community, you know, we have people who are brilliant, people who have the skill sets, just like any other community. But what we sometimes lack is the access to information, the access to getting our foot in the door. So we try to provide those accesses, especially for our youth, by putting them in environments they normally would not be able to be in. So, for instance, we just created this fellowship called the 1834 Fellowship. And the 1834 Fellowship is a public policy fellowship. So we understand that there is a huge gap in terms of Black people who are policymakers at all 3 levels of government, whether on the political side or in the bureaucracy. So our goal is to train 40 high potential smart youth of the next 2 years on public policy in hopes that they will pursue a career in public policy, whether it's at the political level, bureaucracy level, whether it's at an NGO, or even going back to their communities to advocate for public policy and do it in the proper way. But not only does it provide them with that, but also provide them with access. It provide them to access to an environment that they normally wouldn't have the opportunity to be in.
Yeah, I think that's so transformational. Just speaking from my own personal experience, I'm currently going through the Action Canada Fellowship, yes. And it has a very strong public policy angle. And just the, not only the network within Action Canada, but those community leaders that we get to interact with, and also the diversity of experiences and opinions we get to interact with, has honestly been so transformational for me. And I really look forward to seeing how that program progresses and the successes that it has, because just in my personal experience with Action Canada, it truly has been transformational. And it sounds like this fellowship could be really amazing. So I'm super excited to see how that plays out.
We're really excited as well, because they're going to be exposed to not only policymakers on the political side, on the bureaucracy side, but we're planning on visiting the Senate. We're planning on providing them with opportunities to have a mentor, opportunities to see firsthand how policy is developed, and to reflect on who's missing from the table, whose voice and experience is missing from different types of policy, and why is it so important to have a table that have diverse voices, especially when policy is being created.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned just off the top that you folks also work with agency boards and commission appointments. Tell me a bit more about that, because I think those link really well together, right? Because in so many cases, it's those agencies, boards, and commissions that are making really huge decisions across the country for many different portfolios. So I'd love to hear a bit more about that.
So, we've been told that, a lot of people from our community have applied to agencies, boards, and commissions, and the application just goes to this deep hole, and they don't understand what's going on. So we advocate all levels of government to increase the representation of Black people on agencies, boards, and commissions. Because as you said, they help to develop policies and policies that affect everybody, including the Black community. So we do workshops on agencies, boards, and commissions. So of course we don't have control on who gets on the board, but we do help our community understand the process, how to fill out the application in the right way, and information that needs to be on those applications, while at the same time, encouraging the different levels of government to increase the representation of Black people on those agencies, boards, and commissions.
I'd love to just learn more about how the organization came to be, and a bit more about the organization's history.
This organization was started in 2004. It was started because of a situation with the Honorable Jean Augustine. There was a new leader for the party, and when it came time to appoint ministers, the Honorable Jean Augustine was not reappointed. In the previous government, with the previous leader, she was a minister. So then the new leader came, she was no longer a minister. So we didn't have a representation at the top decision-making table in the country. And members of the community were very, very upset that that was happening. So they came together and they wrote letters, and they spoke to the leader of the party, the prime minister at that time. And eventually she became the Speaker of the House, because she was elected Speaker of the House. And then she was also appointed Special Envoy to Grenada, I think it was. So having that experience, the leaders in our community at that point thought, we need to have an organization that will help to support our elected officials. And so out of that came Operation Black Vote, in terms of not only supporting the people who are elected, but also encouraging more people to run for elected office.
So what is next? You mentioned the 1834 Fellowship. What do you folks have your sights set on next?
So we've been busy for the past 2 years with municipal election and provincial election and the federal election. And June election time, we are super busy because we are doing, we had the first ever provincial debate in Ontario, where all the provincial leaders except for one showed up and basically addressed the Black community and our concerns head on. We also had a Toronto municipal debate with the municipal folks who, the folks who are running for mayor in Toronto. Again, it was an opportunity for them to come and address specific issues in the Black community. Both were very, very successful. Our community came out, which indicates to us that there is a need for this type of engagement on our own terms with issues that pertain to us in particular. We also did a municipal boot camp, and the municipal boot camp was, we had workshops on E-Day, fundraising, communications, basically on how to run a successful municipal campaign. And we had people from our community come out from across Ontario. We had people from Oshawa, from Ottawa, from London that drove in for this one-day workshop. For the federal election, we did a dinner in politics. And that was a way of getting our community engaged in talking about politics federally. So the goal was for you to get together, have a meal, and talk about politics and talk about your intentions for the 2019 election. So was it going to be voting or volunteering? Whatever it is that you're going to do, we want you to get together and have a conversation, because we understand that at times there are issues from our community, but there's no outlet for it. So we thought this dinner in politics would be a great outlet for our community. Now that we're in a period of where there's not going to be another election for a couple of years, we are starting the cycle over again. So we have our annual Black Women's Summit. We'll have our Next Generation Youth Summit. We're focusing on the 1834 Fellowship. But we also we're going to be having workshops again on, you know, agencies, boards, and commissions. So what do you need to do to apply for agency boards and commission? We will continue to speak to our elected officials and encourage them not only to do appointments, but also we know that, you know, for election cycle will begin again. So their election readiness team will probably be getting ready, putting names together for the next rounds of election provincially and federally. So who's going to run for which party and for which riding? And so we're encouraging them to start from now to look at our community and figure out, you know, who might be available or ready to run in the next rounds of election. And if there is somebody, you know, what can you do to help them get ready for a nomination? How can you stir them in the right way and sort of mentor them through the process?
It sounds like you're still going to be very busy.
Yes. But it's interesting. The busyness is different because during an election, there's a definite timeline because the election is a certain date.
Yes.
So we're able to be more relaxed in our planning, even though we do want to get all these things done this particular year.
I'd love to know how folks, you know, folks like me can show allyship with Operation Black Vote Canada and what folks, you know, listeners who maybe aren't in Ontario or otherwise can do to support this work.
Depending on where you are. I mean, if you're in government or in on the political side or the bureaucracy side, I think the major thing that you could do is to provide access. Provide access in terms of jobs or internship or even access in terms of being able to come in and speak to the elected official or the senior staff to hear our concerns. We think that representation does matter. So the access part is great. For everybody else, it's just to ensure, I think, at whatever decision, no matter what area you're in, whatever decision-making table you're at, take an internal audit. Look around the table and say, okay, is this Canada? Who is missing? Whose voices is missing? Whose experience is missing? And if there is a deficit, go out and, you know, find those people who can fill that gap. So whatever decision your organization or company is making, it becomes a decision where it's going to affect everybody, but you have multiple voices. So the decision will be a lot better for everybody included.
I think those are two very strong calls to action that I think will have a really big impact. Honestly, when I ask the call to action question, sometimes folks don't like give super tangible things. These, I think, are incredibly tangible. So I can't wait for folks to hear this episode and hear those calls to action. And I know I'm personally going to be thinking about those at the decision-making tables that I'm at.
Although we have four Black federal elected officials. We have more provincially and even more municipally who I think are doing a great job. And you can see that they've already made a difference in the jobs that they're doing by those who are elected to particular council seats or provincial seats. The representation is actually very tangible, and you see that by how policies are being rolled out and how it's become a little bit more inclusive.
I think there are lots of folks who agree wholeheartedly that it's important to have many voices around, many voices and many diverse voices and perspectives around the decision-making table. But I'd love for you to highlight from your perspective really why that is so important.
Having diverse voices at the table, we know, create better policies and better outcomes for everybody involved. Because we're seeing issues through a diverse lens, so the solution is being thought about in a diverse lens, and the outcomes are usually better for everybody involved in that decision making.
I think that that's so important because we hear a lot about folks kind of paying lip service to diverse decision making and diverse tables, but those, when you actually look at them, they're not that diverse. And then I think, kind of what you see is decisions that are made that honestly have a lot of unintentional built-in bias and assumptions in them. So I can definitely appreciate, well, I don't know how to phrase it. I think that there's lots of work that people need to do to challenge their own and know their own biases and assumptions. And one of those is just, like you mentioned, looking around and seeing if those biases are going to be challenged by the folks around the table. And in many cases, they're not.
So I think, you know, a lot of people have different definition of diversity. And one of my favorite saying is, you know, diversity is being invited to the dance, and inclusion is actually being asked to dance, which means it's great to invite people to the table, but if my voice isn't as valued or being able to be heard, then that's just diversity, it's not inclusion. So what we need to have is people being ready to accept and take in other people's lived experiences, which means if you're sitting around a table, if you don't have diversity of lived experiences, then your outcomes to any kind of decision making is probably going to be the same because you all have the same type of experience. So you need to have diverse lived experiences around the table in order to have that kind of voice that's going to be able to speak to a population that is Canada.
Valuing lived experience as expertise.
Yes.
I think that's so important too. And that unfortunately, a lot of folks don't necessarily see how those two things are related, but it's so critically important. Like there's so many issues and challenges that I have couldn't even imagine the lived experience because I've never fortunately had to live that experience. And so the experts are the folks that have, not, you know, the big policy report that I'll read and not still really understand. I think I love the metaphor of the dance. I think that's a really succinct way of putting it.
I think what people need to realize that the Black community is not monolithic. We're very, very diverse. So and because we're diverse, we also have diverse lived experiences. So a lot of times, you know, organizations say, we have a Black person here. And then that person is left with the load of carrying the entire community when their experience isn't that of the entire Black community. So it's not a matter of just having one Black person at the table. It's a matter of having a diversity of Black people at the table so that you can have a multiple of different experiences from the same community.
Yes, there have definitely been times in my life where I've been asked, Katie, what do women think about this?
Exactly.
Like, I don't know. Great question. Let's ask them. If you want to know what I think. So true. But I think too, there was a lot of I don't know, criticism is maybe not the right word, but in the Trudeau government's first mandate, they were doing a lot of consultation. Mm-hmm. And then folks started talking about consultation fatigue and things like that. And I think you see that too at municipal levels where the access to government is a little bit more there. But you know, the consultation's important. And I mean, I think there's ways to do better and more meaningful consultation. Yes. You know, that's a whole other podcast. Yes. But,
For our community, I think we've been consulting for years. We've got, I mean, for almost any issue, there's probably a report on it. You know, I think government need to realize that we're tired of consultation. We're ready for action. And I think one way of stalling action is to consult. And we've been consulted to death. So yes. Right now, I think the community is just like, okay, let's get some action. We want action right now.
Yeah, I think that's actually a great way of reframing what I was thinking about. You're like, yeah, in a lot of cases, the answers already exist. Yes. They're on somebody's shelf somewhere. And yeah, the governments decide that they want to try to recreate the wheel when they really don't have to.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, I think that's an important reframing. Yeah. Okay. Well, this has been amazing. I honestly am, like I said, I've been following, I'm trying to think when I first became aware of Operation Black Vote. To be honest, it was definitely on Twitter. Okay. Yeah, I love Twitter. Yes. Yeah. And yeah, I admire your work. And I've done quite a bit of work on getting more women involved. But yeah. Again, I've had my biases pushed that's not yes. enough. And, you know, we, like you said, need to think of diversity and inclusion in different ways. And so I'm also trying to personally do that and do better at that. So I appreciate this conversation. And I think that also is, you know, again, helping me learn and challenge and grow. Right. And and I'm really happy to have had this opportunity.
Thank you. And, you know, we need allies like you. You have a certain platform and a certain audience. And the more we get the information out there through platforms such as yours, the more I think things will change. And we just need more allies like you that will help spread the word and hear our voices through your platform. So thank you very much for having me. We're really appreciative.
Thanks for listening. If you liked this episode, leave us a review. You can keep up with us on social media by following @FemWonk on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. See you next time.